Someone once said, there's nothing more fearful at times than a strange imagination. Hello, this is Nelson Olmsted. Gerald Kirsch is one of England's outstanding writers. Occasionally, his short stories are published in American magazines, and the one I want to tell you today is his most recent. It's about a strange old antique dealer who invented a rather terrifying myth around a cheap piece of junk he had in his shop. It's entitled Seed of Destruction. I always maintained that Mr. Ziska deserved to get on in the world, if only on account of the extraordinary richness of the lies he told. He started as an antiquary and jeweler in a small way of business, buying and selling all kinds of valueless rubbish, cameo brooches, Indian bangles, and job lots of semi-precious stones. I used to let him sell me knick-knacks, for which I had no earthly use, just for the sake of a sales talk. For in Mr. Ziska's stuffy little shop, a paste brooch was not simply a paste brooch. It was, as he always explained, an item of a very special sort. It had been worn by Dr. Crippen's wife. It had been found in the stomach of an ostrich. It had fooled an Indian Maharaja. He nearly persuaded me once that a rusty old Spanish knife with a broken point was the fatal knife used by Charlotte Corday when she stabbed Marat in his bath. It was a left-handed knife, he explained.
Unique, he said. Amazing opportunity. Valuable historic relic. Dirt cheap.
£5?
No.
£4.15?
No. £4? Not at any price? Pity, pity to see a friend missing such a bargain. Then, what about this valuable old meerschaum pipe bitten through at the mouthpiece? This was the pipe Emile Zola smoked while he was riding Nana. Look, crumbs of tobacco still stuck in the bottom of the bowl. A literary man should not fail to snap up this sacred relic. To anybody else, £5. To you, 35 shillings.
No? And so he ran on. He always got me in the end, so that I still possess Lord Byron's eyeglass, Beethoven's paperweight, a rusty spearhead which belonged to Richard the Lionhearted, and a brass ring bearing the signs of the zodiac and guaranteed to bring good luck. I have never been able to give the things away. He had what you call personal magnetism, that funny little man. As he talked, he glared into your eyes and screwed his face into frightful grimaces. He wore an antiquated frock coat, which, he once told me, had been the property of Richard Wagner, and he never let himself be seen without a pink orchid in his frayed buttonhole. He was irresistible. It was Mr. Ziska who invented the incredible legend of the Seed of Destruction. He made it up in the spur of the moment. There was something of the artist in Mr. Ziska. He was tired of telling the same old story about how the shoddy little rings and pins that he sold would bring good fortune to the ladies and gentlemen who wore them. So he struck a new note. He had an inspiration. It had come to him in a flash. I was there when it happened. He had stopped trying to sell me Charles Dickens' favorite gold toothpick and had taken from the tray a gold ring set with a spinel seal as big as my thumbnail, clumsily engraved with a bit of inscription in Arabic. He stood there, blinking at it. I could see he was trying to think of something fresh. And so I said, the seal of King Solomon, no doubt. He blinked at me and smiled shyly and said, no, this is not the seal of Solomon. This, my friend, is known as the Seed of Destruction. It brings good luck, I suppose.
No, my friend, that is very wrong. It does not bring good luck. It brings bad luck. That's why it is called the Seed of Destruction. It brings very bad luck indeed, the inscription says. It's the destiny of man to be in trouble. If you're rich, it will make you poor. If you're healthy, it will make you ill. If you're alive, it will soon be the cause of your death. See? It was cut by a magician, an Arabian magician, very bad man indeed, for an Arab prince in the days of Saladin. The magician put a spell on it, a shocking spell. This ring is absolutely certain to bring bad luck. Not good luck. Bad luck. I personally guarantee it. A bargain. £25?
You expect me to pay £25 for that? And incidentally, it doesn't seem to have done you much harm. Come off it, Mr. Ziska.
Come now. No, listen and learn, young man. I've not told you how the enchantment works. This ring does no harm at all to the purchaser of it. Not to the buyer, nor to the seller. I bought it. Therefore, it cannot hurt me. If you buy it, it cannot hurt you. But if you give this ring away, the most horrible misfortunes will fall upon the head of the person to whom you give it. Do you understand? That is the whole idea of the thing. It is obvious, can't you see? The Arab prince fell in love with the princess, but she loved another prince instead of him. So the prince paid the magician a lot of money to make this ring, and pretending brotherly affection, she placed it on her rival's finger. 3 days later, the rival was eaten by a lion. But the princess, poor girl, went to bed and died of a broken heart. And so the prince, who was sorry for what he'd done, got the ring back and hid it away. But one of the eunuchs in the palace stole it.
Well, what happened to him?
Oh, it is equally unlucky to steal it. It must be bought and paid for. The eunuchs were set upon by robbers. They cut his throat and stole the ring from him and sold it to a merchant in Aleppo. But they hadn't paid for it, so they were caught and had their heads cut off. But the merchant sold the ring to a young nobleman, so he was all right. He had bought and paid for it. The nobleman, who was trying to keep on the right side of his uncle, who was very miserly and wicked, gave him the ring for a present. And would you believe it? The same day, the wicked old uncle fell off a high roof and broke his neck. And the young nobleman inherited all his money. I could go on all day telling you what happened. £25?
I haven't got any rich uncle, and I haven't got an enemy worth killing, and I haven't got £25.
Perhaps you think I'm not telling you the truth.
No, no.
Yes, I can see. You think I'm a liar. You're as good as calling me a liar to my face, and I treat you like a friend. I want to do you a good turn, sell you the famous seed of destruction for £25, and you as good as call me a swindler, a confidence trickster, a cheat. Very well.
No, 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 my dear Mr. Ziska. Don't take it like that. Well, in order to mollify him, I had to buy a cracked china teapot, the one Shakespeare used when he was writing Hamlet. Well, later, I heard that Mr. Ziska had sold the seed of destruction to a thin lady who had dark circles under her eyes, which were swollen from weeping. He asked £50 for it and got it. It was a fair price. The ring was worth £4 or £5, and the story, as he later elaborated it, was reasonably cheap at £45 or so. I forgot about the whole affair until I was reminded of it by a sensational feature article in a Sunday paper. It was entitled Jewels of Death, and was composed of a little fact and a lot of fiction about famous unlucky gems. We've all read that sort of thing before. The article was illustrated with photographs of the great blue diamond, the bloody ruby of Cawnpore, the Peruvian emerald, and, last of all, the seed of destruction. This strange spinel seal, it appeared, had a sinister history. Mr. Ziska's story was there, more or less as I'd heard it when he concocted it in his shop. The article went on to say that the seed of destruction had been discovered by the ill-fated Mrs. Mace in an obscure and nameless little cheap jewelry shop. Mrs. Mace, believing in the mysterious virtue of this terrible gem, had given the ring to her faithless lover, who was surprised by her jealous husband 2 days later and beaten to death with a sculptor's mallet. Mrs. Mace sold the seed of destruction to a morbidly curious London businessman, who, having given his word of honor that he would never give the ring away without receiving payment for it, conveniently forgot his promise and gave it to his partner with a friendly slap on the back. Less than an hour after he put the ring in his finger, the hapless partner was run over and instantly killed by a heavy truck. It's true that he was under the influence of drink when staggering off the curb, but it looked very peculiar, one had to admit. He had never been run over before. The ring, together with his other effects, went to his heir, a worthless young man who squandered everything, forged 7 checks, was sent to prison, and died there of pneumonia. The pawnbroker, who by this time had the seed of destruction as an unredeemed pledge, sold it to an American for a considerable sum. The American added it to his collection of horrible curios. One evening, his daughter, who had been drinking bathtub gin with some friends, took the ring out of her father's private museum and put it on in drunken bravado. She defied the seed of destruction, said the writer of the article. The party went on, and the daughter, although she could hardly stand, insisted on taking out a high-powered roadster. She zigzagged at 70 miles an hour along the highway, miscalculated on a hairpin bend, and crashed. And that was the end of her. The bereaved father sold the seed of destruction for one penny to a dealer and embraced religion. Well, more than 2 years later, as I was whistling to a taxi in Piccadilly, an extremely elegant young man stopped me and said, "Excuse me, you're Mr. Kirsch, aren't you?" And I said that I was indeed. "I don't think you remember me. Does the name Ziska convey anything to you?" "My name is Ziska. Many a time I saw you in my father's shop." "Why, of course it conveys something to me. Surely you must be Ziska's son." We shook hands and shared a taxi. I asked young Ziska how his father was. He sighed and said, "Why, I've taken over the business, but I'll never be anything like he was. What a man he was. What a personality. What a businessman. But of course, you know, in our business, we have to have good eyes. A jeweler who can't see straight might as well retire. Dad was marvelous. But about 5 years ago, his poor old eyes gave out on him. He got a cataract, had an operation, and he was never the same again. I took over. What a man he was. I dare say you remember that funny business about the seed of destruction."
"Yes, I know. Because I happened to be in the spot when your father made it up."
"Yes, yes, I know. I wish I had half of the old man's imagination. I can't do it. It was his story that made that seed of destruction what it is today. He bought it for 50 shillings and sold it for 50 pounds. And now, well, I can speak to you freely because you're an old friend, it must be worth 5,000 pounds if it's worth a penny. I've been offered 4,000 pounds for it."
"Oh, have you got it then?"
"Oh, yes. I bought it off a dealer for 3,000 pounds. I knew it would please the old man. He was a great guy. I wanted to give him a little surprise, so I brought this seed of destruction home and said to him, 'You'll never guess what I've got.' And then he asked me what I'd got, and I told him, and he was as pleased as punch. He was pretty sick, getting on in years, as I dare say you know. And I said to him, 'Well, here you are, Dan. You invented it. You made it. You built it up. You worked miracles with it. You took a tuppenny halfpenny spinel and turned it into a property by your own genius. And here it is, worth a packet. I make a present of it to you.' And then he asked me how much I'd paid for it, and I told him 3,000 pounds. And he sat up in bed with the ring on his little finger, and he shouted, 'Oi!' and passed away. Heart failure. Shock. It had cost him 50 shillings. He was a great guy. Where are we? Shaftesbury Avenue? Oh, I get out here. Nice to have seen you again. Bye-bye.
This has been Gerald Kirsch's short story, Seed of Destruction, as told by Nelson Olmsted. And now a closing word.
Well, this story by Gerald Kirsch appeared recently in Esquire magazine. I hope you've enjoyed hearing it. This is Nelson Olmsted saying goodbye and good reading.
Nelson Olmsted has presented another great short story from the world of literature. This is Red Feather Month in nearly 1,000 cities of America. By giving generously to his local community chest, every citizen can be sure that he is supporting, most wisely, the friendly, neighborly services that help his community day after day, month after month. To give generously to the community chest is to be a good neighbor. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.